Hi, it's Diane. On my mind, public schools struggled to reopen. 10 months after school buildings shut their doors because of the pandemic and moved to remote learning, many remain closed. And efforts to bring children back in places like Chicago and Washington, D.C. have faltered. Teachers' unions have blocked attempts, citing inadequate safety measures, while those supporting a return to in-person learning say the data shows it can be done without community spread. President Biden says he wants all children in kindergarten through eighth grade back in school in his first 100 days. To talk us through what's happening, I spoke with Laura Meckler, Washington Post reporter covering national education policy and trends and the Education Department. Laura, what do we know about how many kids in public school are actually learning in person, how many are fully remote, and how many are in sort of a hybrid situation?
It's a really good question. Unfortunately, we don't really know because the federal government has not been tracking this. And there are 14,000 school districts across the country. And obviously, journalists cannot get their hands around all of them. That said, there has been some surveying done. There was one done by MCH Strategic Data. They're a consulting firm where they surveyed almost all of the school districts, and we get a sense of it from their results. They found that there were 17% of school districts were fully open. There were 51% were open using a hybrid model where kids are in school part of the time and at home part of the time, and then 24% fully online. So that's what their estimate is. Of course, we should keep in mind that's a survey of school districts. There are a lot of very small districts out there. So you might have a district with, 1,000 kids, and then you have New York City schools with close to 1 million. So all districts are not the same, and in that survey, they each kind of count as one. But it gives you a sense.
It's interesting that NPR has reported that a third of the country's students have not had a single day in school since last March. I presume that means in school, in the building.
Yeah, that's very plausible, and that's consistent with those numbers I just gave you that showed 24% of districts, but some of those districts are quite large, such as Los Angeles schools, which have not opened. And even places that are open, we should keep in mind, that doesn't mean that every kid is back. There are a lot of kids who are choosing fully remote, even if there is an option for in-person, because their parents don't think it's safe. And one of the cruel ironies of this pandemic is that kids who have the fewest resources, which there's a lot of overlap between communities of color and poverty, it's a lot of the families who face the biggest challenges, who are the most skeptical of coming back into school buildings. Those are arguably the kids who need it the most. You have a lot of wealthier parents who are comfortable bringing their kids back to school, but that may be related to the fact that they aren't seeing as much COVID in their day-to-day lives.
President Biden says his goal is to have a majority of kindergarten through eighth grade schools open within 100 days of taking office. He's not said how he's going to calculate this and whether that means kids would divide their time between being at home, being in school. I mean, it's a mess, Laura.
I'm so glad you asked that question, Diane, because this has been a little hobby horse of mine, and I've put it into a few stories, which is that this goal seems beyond squishy to me. What does this even mean? I mean, given the survey results I just said, if you count hybrid learning, which I think it should be counted because there are good reasons for doing hybrid, we're already at a majority. So I'm not sure what this goal means. It just seems like something someone came up with and said without really giving it a lot of thought, just to be completely honest. But clearly, the message he's sending is that he wants more kids back to school. I think that's the takeaway. How you calculate it, I would love to know.
And they're talking about $130 billion to do this. How would that $130 billion be used? Is it cleaning schools, cleaning desks? What's it for?
It's for all sorts of things. Some of it is cleaning stuff. Some of it's for personal protective equipment, such as masks, and some of it's for dividers. They're putting up dividers, like a plastic divider between kids' desks or to protect the teacher. Some of it is for extra personnel, nurses to be on hand at school. Maybe you need extra bus drivers to have fewer kids on any given bus. Maybe you need more teachers in order to have fewer kids in each classroom. There's just a lot. Some of it's technology demands. I mean, there's a lot of different expenses associated with reopening. So I think it's to pay for a range of those kinds of supplies.
And it would seem if you were going to have kids in school, they'd have to be socially distant. And if you had a full contingent of those kids, you'd have to have more schools.
Yeah, which clearly is not going to happen. I mean, there are a lot of potential solutions to this. I mean, one thing that's important to note is that almost every district, is offering kids a remote option. So when some kids take the remote option, that means that even if you allow for everybody to come back who wants to come back, maybe you have fewer kids in the classroom. And there are some people who have suggested things like using empty buildings, say have elementary schools spread out into the high school space, because high school is harder to bring back and also less urgent to bring back. But in reality, what the solutions that we're tending to see are these hybrid options where essentially kids are in class, half the kids are there in the morning and the other half are there in the afternoon, or half are there on Monday, Tuesday, the other half are there on Thursday, Friday, or an A week and a B week. I mean, there's a lot of different flavors of it, but the idea is that you bring in half the kids for in-person learning, and then the other half, sometimes they're watching, like on a video of the classroom. Sometimes they're doing independent work during that time. So it just really varies sort of what the setup is. But there's a lot of creativity that's gone into these hybrid models.
You know, creativity is one thing, but doesn't that require some supervision from parents who may have their own jobs they're trying to hold on to in the process of trying to keep their kids focused on schoolwork?
Absolutely. I mean, that's just one of the many reasons why school from home is a problem. I mean, yes, parents are incredibly taxed. And you have a couple different versions of that. You've got parents who are trying to work from home, and it's hard to work from home and supervise school at the same time. And you've got parents who can't work from home. That's even worse. Who's watching these kids? There are some people who argue that it's even more dangerous to be outside of school than inside of school, because these kids are ending up in other environments, or just sort of at a neighbor's house or with a relative, maybe with a grandparent, that those are people do what they have to do, and that those may be creating even like less controlled situations. Maybe they're not wearing masks, whereas if they were in the building, school buildings, they would be. So there is a lot of concern about that. But, you know, the urgency of going back to school, it just really exists on many levels. There's an economic imperative for people to get back to work. There's a personal, how do families function? And then there's the academic urgency.
I don't mean to, at this point, dump on our brand new president who wants to open the schools, but the teachers' unions are fighting back against this. What's their position, and what do they want before they'll go back into the classrooms?
You know, it varies by school district. Some teachers' unions are really dug in and fighting it. Others have found accommodations, have found ways to make it work. So it just really varies. They want a lot of different things. Some of them are obvious, such as, you know, the personal protective equipment and the cleaning of the schools and that sort of thing. Ventilation systems, updated ventilation systems. Some of them want widespread testing so that you're essentially, you know, testing kids before they come in the building to see. Some have talked about vaccination, although interestingly enough, there isn't a lot of linking of vaccination to opening, even though teachers are being prioritized in many places for the vaccine. So they're looking for a lot of different pieces to this, you know, some of which are more doable than others.
But even if you vaccinate the teachers, what about the kids? While apparently they are at lower risk, still there is that possibility of putting them all in a classroom. And how are you going to keep them safe?
Yes, it is not a risk-free activity, no question about it. A student could come to school who is asymptomatic, doesn't seem to be sick, but is in fact carrying the virus, and could expose others. So that is why, even if teachers are vaccinated, that all these protections that we know about need to be still in place. Social distancing, keeping desks spread apart, masking, kids wearing masks while they're in the building. Cohorting, what that is you keep a certain group of kids together and they only see those kids. You don't have kids mixing up. You don't have a lunchroom where everybody's running around together. You don't have two classes coming together for a joint presentation. You keep one group of kids isolated, which is why, by the way, high school is hard to do because people keep changing classes and they're with different kids in every class. But elementary school, you can keep just that group of cohorted kids together. And the reason why that's important is that if one of them turns out to have been infected, then you can have a discrete group of people quarantine and isolate for the required amount of time. But I think so, yes, to answer your question, which is a good one, it is not risk-free, but there is some solace here because when we look at what like the CDC has found in a piece that they published in the Journal of the American Medical Association this week and the studies that they've done, they found that in places that are open, especially if they follow these precautions, these mitigating protections, when they do that, that there really isn't much virus transmission in the school. Doesn't mean there's not any, but you also have to compare it to, you know, what's happening in the school versus what's happening in the larger community. And in almost all cases, we're seeing the rate of infection and the rate of transmission in the schools far lower than it is in the community as a whole, which suggests that school is a safe activity for kids to be doing given where we are.
So would teachers go along with the idea that if they were vaccinated, it would be, quote, safe enough to resume in-classroom teaching?
I mean, teachers, it depends on the teacher. I've talked to teachers who have said, yes, I would feel ready to go back if I was vaccinated. Other teachers have said things like, well, my husband isn't being vaccinated, and what happens if I'm still a carrier? We don't know if someone who's vaccinated can still transmit the virus. So what happens if I get a kid infects me or a colleague infects me, and then I bring it home to my husband? And then he gets infected. So, you know, not all teachers are willing to say that. So it's interesting to me, even though vaccination is happening, we basically have two things going on. We have unions still pushing back. They are pushing for all the protections that we've been talking about, and which I think that's what the public health experts would say as well. I mean, if you talk to Dr. Fauci and others, they say, you know, you still need to wear masks even if you've been vaccinated. You still need to socially distance. This is not a panacea. It's a comfort, but it doesn't change everything. So the unions are still pushing for those things. That said, there are districts that are trying and in some cases succeeding in reopening their doors. We hear about more every day. I mean, here in D.C., the public schools are scheduled to open on Monday. Now we'll see what happens. The union is pushing back on this, but you know, they've said that they're coming back.
A quick break. More from Laura Meckler when we come back.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
It's news,
culture, and curiosities.
From the District, Tacoma Park,
Alexandria,
Friendship Heights,
Hyattsville,
Falls Church,
Northeast Washington, D.C., in your inbox every weekday afternoon.
DCS Daily.
Sign up at dcs.com/newsletter.
dcs.com/newsletter.
Here's the rest of my conversation with Laura Meckler. She's a Washington Post reporter covering national education policy and trends and the Education Department. So, what does the science actually tell us about the spread of the virus in schools and whether it really can be prevented?
You know, the science tells us that it's relatively safe to go back to schools. I mean, as long as you do these mitigating steps, as long as you do things like masking, and by the way, there are schools that are open in America today that don't require masks, that recommend them but don't require them, that don't do social distancing, that don't do any of this. But what the science seems to say and what the CDC said this week was, if you do these, if you take these steps, if you make sure your HVAC systems are up to par, if you have social distancing in the classroom, if you cohort the kids so that they are just stay with one group, if you require masks, that in fact the rates of transmission in school are quite low.
You know, it's interesting because this comes at the very time when Dr. Fauci and others are suggesting it makes sense to wear two masks when you go to the grocery store or when you're out somewhere where you're encountering other people. I've begun to do that. Wouldn't that make sense for kids who are going to be in a room with a number of other people for long periods of time?
I don't know. Maybe it would. There hasn't been much talk about that in the school setting. So I don't feel like I'm equipped to fully answer that question. But certainly a mask rather than no mask is a huge difference.
Yeah, and the CDC is recommending that schools require masks. So I guess some of those schools are simply saying, we're not going to do that.
That's basically what they're saying, is that they're saying personal freedom, personal choice. I mean, there are a lot of conservative parts of the country that don't believe in mandates for things like this. So, you know, that's what you've seen in a lot of the country, that they are not required.
And the other question becomes, would you see that before opening schools, the kids themselves should have the vaccine if they're going to be in classrooms?
Well, the vaccine has not been approved for children under the age of 16, so they cannot get the vaccine. So that isn't really part of the equation right now. We're just assuming that this has to happen without vaccination. But as I think you said earlier, children are much less likely to become infected with the coronavirus. And if they do, the symptoms are far less severe. So, you know, I think we just have to kind of live with that level of risk right now.
You know, we're even hearing some rumblings that schools might not even open or reopen in the fall of 2021.
Oh my gosh, are you trying to scare every parent in America, Diane?
I mean, could that really happen?
I mean, sure, things could it happen. It could happen. I do not personally think that's going to happen given what I see with the efforts to reopen so many schools that a lot of districts are trying to open this spring, in February or in March. They may or may not succeed in that. I think by the time by the time we get to next or late August, September, you know, certainly teachers should be vaccinated, which will help. Most adults will probably be vaccinated by the fall. That seems to be what the projections are. And I think that most school leaders expect to be opening this fall. That said, I've been surprised on this very question before. If you had asked me when my kids' school closed last March, would they be closed for the rest of the school year? I would have said absolutely not. I was in denial until the day that the DC schools announced they were done for the year. But I absolutely thought they would open this fall, and of course they did not. So I have been surprised on this before. That said, I I will set myself up to be surprised again, perhaps, but I do think that they will open come fall 2021.
I'm just worried about this new variant and whether, in fact, that could affect what happens. But again, I don't want to be the naysayer here. I'm hoping, as you do, that things go just fine. I wonder how the teachers' unions themselves are feeling now that Joe Biden is president as opposed to Donald Trump. Is there a difference in their thinking and reactions?
I mean, they're thrilled that Joe Biden is president. They feel like they are, you know, going to get the resources that they need. They love the fact that he requested this $130 billion to help schools reopen. I think they feel like they have a partner that they can work with towards this. Now, teachers unions are not a monolith. Everybody, you know, that's made up of many different locals, and they all have their own a little bit different point of view on this. But I think that in general, the posture of the teachers unions has changed a bit toward let's work together to see how we can get the schools open, which doesn't mean I'm ready to open today, even though some districts are ready to open today. But I think they've always said, the teachers unions have always said, well, we want to reopen as long as it's safe, which I find one of the most sort of useless comments, because what does that mean, as long as it's safe? I mean, everybody has a different point of view of what safe looks like. So you've seen, for instance, you will not find a teachers union in this country that says they don't want to go back. They say, I want to go back as long as it's safe. And here are the long list of things I think that we need in order to make it safe, some of which are doable and maybe some of which are not. So, you know, we'll have to see. We'll have to see. Of course, there are some who say that we shouldn't go back until essentially everybody is vaccinated, since until the pandemic is 100% over. But I think that's an outlying view. So now what we hear from the teachers union, in addition to what they have been saying, which is they want to go back, let's try to make it work, because they feel like they have a partner who is going to work with them. And it's been interesting because in recent days, Biden administration officials, including the president himself, have been asked about teachers' unions' objections. And even though he's focused on reopening schools, they've given a lot of deference to unions, saying, oh, they have legitimate points, and yes, we're concerned about them. And, you know, they have not taken, there has not been a lot of daylight there.
How likely is it that Biden is going to get that $130
billion? Well, I always joke that nobody ever went broke betting against Congress doing something. You know, that's $130 billion is part of a $1.9 trillion, what he calls COVID rescue package, which has had a lot of pushback as being too expensive. Now, most of that money is in direct payments to people, stimulus checks, essentially, $1,400 per person. So that's where they're going to really have to be negotiating this. I think if there is a COVID package, there will be schools money as part of it, and there probably will be one way or another. But you know, gosh, you think about how long it takes Congress to do anything. Are they going to actually pass this before the school year's over, much less distribute the money? I mean, I honestly wonder whether he wants he wants most schools open by within 100 days. And as we already said that he may already have met that goal. So it's kind of a meaningless goal. But if he's really trying to get schools open by the spring, and if the money is a contingent factor, I do wonder about the timing here.
Tell us about Biden's pick to lead the Department of Education and what his thoughts are on reopening.
His pick is Miguel Cardona. He was the commissioner of education in Connecticut, a very unexpected choice, somebody who has not been on the national scene. In fact, less than 2 years ago, he was an assistant superintendent in the Meriden School District in Connecticut, where he's from. However, in his time as the top education official in Connecticut, he focused very heavily on trying to reopen the schools and successfully doing so. The governor, Ned Lamont, who's a Democrat, unusual for a Democrat, pushed very hard for schools to open, and Cardona was part of that. So I think that's part of what got Biden's attention. He is an interesting person in and of himself. He has a great story. His parents moved to Connecticut from Puerto Rico. He grew up in a Spanish-speaking household. He's been very focused on issues of equity, issues of helping all children succeed. So I'll be interested to see what he does with that, assuming he's confirmed for the post.
Let's talk about the kids for a second. How are they doing throughout all this remote learning?
You know, I think it really depends on the kid. You know, we see a lot of research that shows that there's been definitely academic declines. And that's of concern to a lot of people. There's also, I think it's important to keep in mind, this isn't just academic. This is also social emotional. We did a story a little while ago that was about the emotional toll of remote learning on young children. And the headline was, "Remote school is leaving children sad and angry." And we talked to a lot of young children, and that was very true. It's very hard for them, being isolated from their friends, stuck at home, staring at a screen. I mean, you know, we know, as even as adults, staring at a screen all day, you get tired and cranky, and, you know, even more so for a young child. So it's hard. It's I like to think of it as like we've kind of taken away all the fun parts of school. Like we're saying, okay, you still have to learn math, you still have to do your writing. If you're lucky, you're being given those assignments. But oh, by the way, the Valentine's Day party where you get to trade chocolates and Halloween where you get to come dressed up, we're not going to be doing any of that. And no, you're not going to play with your friends on the playground, and you're not going to get to see people. And, you know, my own 7-year-old said to me, you know, the problem is you don't get to meet new friends when you're not in school. And I've never even met my teacher. I mean, it's all the sort of joy of school has been drained. And as they try to hold on to the academic piece and help kids learn, my colleague Perry Stein did a great story about young kids learning to read and how there's been so much regression on that. You know, and if you don't learn to read when you're in second grade, you know, that's a problem because in third grade they expect you to know. So I mean, we're really this is serious. But so they're trying to give people that academics and with mixed success. And you know, there's very little left. I mean, I've seen observed remote school where they try to like share, like let's go around and everybody say something, and it's just not the same when they're like, okay, you know, Anna, what did you think? And then there's like this pause, and then she unmutes herself. She's like, I like, you know, like, what's your favorite animal? I like elephants. Okay, and then the next one. But it's just not the same as being together in a close circle together in the classroom. Just, it isn't. They're trying. And I give teachers a lot of credit for trying, but it's not the same.
So how are they going to make up? How can they make up for what they've lost? Is that going to require tutors, and who's going to pay for that? I mean, that's really hard.
I mean, how are they going to make up for it? The first question is, are they going to make up for it? I mean, I think that one decent bet is that they're not, and that just kids, just bad things happen, and that's the way it goes, which I hope is not the case, but that may be the case. The people who would like to find ways to help make it up, they point to a couple different ideas that have research behind them as having been successful. One of them is, as you said, intensive tutoring, where kids get tutoring in school, as they found is most effective. And like either one-on-one or one-on-two, it doesn't have to be a teacher. It can be a paraprofessional or somebody else working with them. But that intensive tutoring does help kids catch up. This summer is going to be an important time, perhaps some version of summer school. So, and I think that some of that $130 billion would pay for some of this. So we'll see if it gets funded and if it happens.
So I don't suppose you'd like to make any predictions as to when most schools around the country are going to open again?
Well, my first thing is I would say I think that most schools may be open right now. So I think we should keep that in mind. The state of Texas, the state of Florida, all those schools are all back. They have been all year because the governors, the Republican governors, taking their cue from Trump, mandated it. So those are big states, you know, not so much with California, but like there are a lot of parts of rural America are back. So That said, there are some big places that are not. I think before we see, I think what the real question is, like, when are we going to return to normal, right? When's it going to look like it normally looks? And I think that's the same question for schools as we have for our society as a whole. My guess is that we're back to something approximating normal by next fall, although we may still be wearing masks. There may still be mitigation factors at work. But I hope and I think it'll be next fall, but I have been wrong on this before, so I don't recommend anybody, buy stock based on my guesses or make any bets with anything on the line.
Well, I can tell you, Laura, is I share your hope, and I thank you for being with us.
It was so nice to see you again, so thank you so much for having me.
That was Laura Meckler. She's a Washington Post reporter covering national education policy and trends and the Education Department. And that's all for today. Thanks to those of you who've written in to let us know what's on your mind. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter or send us an email, drpodcast@wamu.org. Our theme music is composed by Jim Brunberg and Ben Landsberg of Wonderly. The show is produced by Becca Kaufman and Allison Brody. Thanks for listening, all. Stay safe. Be well. I'm Diane Rehm.